third and final hour of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. We've got some people on hold. If you'd like to join the conversation, please feel free to give us a call, 651-989-5855. Brought up the paternity leave that our Secretary of Transportation took 2 months of paternity leave. Nobody knew, apparently. Like it was never announced to the public or anything that, you know, Secretary Pete Buttigieg has adopted a child, he and his partner, and he'll be gone for 2 months. You tell me you can't, like...
You know why that wasn't announced.
Of course.
Yes.
Of course. What was he going to do if he'd won president, though? I mean, let's remember, this guy ran for president.
Right.
Like, he wanted to be president. Was the plan, you know, 4 months into your term as president, was the plan to... take paternity leave? Because adoption isn't something that you just decide to do on a whim.
It's a long process.
Knock it out over the course of a weekend. I mean, it takes
I imagine
years.
Yeah, I imagine somebody in the upper echelon of the federal government may have
pulled a couple strings.
Yeah, may have pulled a couple strings. But still, I mean, it's not like it was a surprise.
No,
you know when and maybe. You know, not saying that you delay the adoption or whatever the case may be, but maybe take that bonding time, because that's really what it is. As you pointed out, there wasn't a infirmed mother that needed to be cared for, or an infirmed partner that needed to be cared for. The baby was healthy. Mm-hmm. So you kind of those extreme reasons why somebody may actually need a paternity leave rather than just that bonding period. Maybe take that when we've got flotillas of cargo ships waiting outside ports, maybe take a break from the paternity leave, get back in the office and start doing your job
maybe
for a
you
little
can
bit.
Remote work.
yeah.
I'd imagine that the duties of the Secretary of Transportation, I imagine that a lot of those could be done via Zoom.
If the prerequisite was to be the mayor of South Bend, Indiana.
Right.
And
now the prerequisite was that he liked trains.
Yeah.
He likes trains. I like trains, so I should be the Secretary of Transportation. Also, the prerequisite was that he stood on that stage in South Carolina, dropped out of the presidential race, and endorsed Joe Biden right before Bernie Sanders was worried, right when they were worried that Bernie Sanders was going to win South Carolina.
What did Amy Klobuchar get out of that deal? Because she did the same thing.
I know, she was there too. You know she had an expectation.
There was something.
You know Amy Klobuchar's always got her eye on that next job. Like, she does not want to be the senator from Minnesota anymore. She absolutely does not. I think the worst thing in Amy Klobuchar's life is the idea that she has to go and campaign in Minnesota to run for Senate again. My God. Why do I even have to do this? You know she wants that next gig. She's angled for Supreme Court. She's angled. She ran for president.
Yep.
She's angled for vice president. She's angled for cabinet positions. She's angled for all of these things. And
she's on every short list. And you don't get on a short list without trying to be on a short list.
The only reason she's on the short list is because her people say she's on the short list.
Right.
Like, I don't even know if she's actually on the short list.
Maybe that's the genius of it.
People.
Maybe that's the genius of it. Is you know that there's an opening coming up. You have your people announce that you're on the short list, and then put the other person in the awkward position of saying no, you're not, and then you've got all these angles that you can play as to what, you know, why are you excluding me?
I want to know why she's never been chosen, though. Like, of all the things that she's angled for and campaigned for and sent out press releases and all the stories of the glowing pieces in the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press about how she's on a short list for the next Supreme Court justice, guys. This could happen. Like, why is she never selected? That's the conversation I want to hear.
Yeah.
Why do all these prominent Democrats always pass her over?
I want to be here for that.
And they go to Pete Buttigieg. Pete Buttigieg got the gig over you, Amy.
Yep.
That's got to sting a little bit. 651-989-5855. Let's go to the phones. Brian in Andover. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Yeah, on the Buttigieg, I don't know if you call it paternity or maternity leave, but obviously it's way too long.
2 months is ridiculous.
Thing is, I guess I have a more fundamental question about conservative talk show radio covering topics like this. It seems like it's a superficial conversation when we're talking about how long did this man take off instead of, is such a moral pervert fit for office? When did conservative radio give up the moral high ground on the social issues?
I'll tell you what,
and
Brian,
give homosexuality a pass?
Brian, when you get your own show, you are more than welcome to tackle that topic.
And I don't think it's particularly conservative to try to force your morality and your decisions onto other people. So
yeah, I don't think I don't know that sexuality is a qualification for Secretary of Transportation.
I could not care less.
Yeah. I don't think that would be on my checklist of if I were in charge of hiring the Secretary of Transportation, regardless of who it is. I don't think their sexuality would be on my interview.
You know, what I find far more disqualifying is his complete lack of any sort of credibility or experience. In right. the job that he was given. It was Joe clearly Biden a political payoff.
Joe Biden criticized him during the campaign for not getting sidewalks built.
Yes.
In South Bend. That was Joe Biden's attack on Pete Buttigieg when Pete Buttigieg started to rise in the polls and get a little bit of traction. The attack was he couldn't even build sidewalks in South Bend. Then Joe Biden picked him to be the Secretary of Transportation.
Yep.
What the hell is that about?
Right. So his qualifications
clearly they don't take it seriously.
Are what I care about. I do not care about who he goes home with, who he sleeps with.
I don't either.
Could not care less. I don't care who anybody listening, who you're sleeping with. Could not care. If you are in government job, I expect you to do the work.
Yep.
And I don't care what your personnel, who you worship, any of that stuff. Just do the job. Sorry.
No.
I'm wiping.
You're fine.
This infuriates me because this is why conservatives lose all the time.
Yeah,
because we want to focus on somebody's personal life instead of their qualifications for the job.
I'm trying to imagine the show that Brian Manover wants to listen to.
Yep.
Like, do you really think that's an engaging and interesting conversation to talk about Pete Buttigieg's sexuality and whether or not that is qualifying for him as to be the Secretary of Transportation? That's a show you want to listen to?
And
that's not a show that I want to do.
And I look at it as a categorical opposite of the moral high ground. I want the moral high ground to be that we judge somebody based on their qualifications, not their own personal life decisions that have absolutely zero impact. So if you want to go on and call out everybody who's homosexual and say that they're unfit for that, get your own show. But I guarantee you, I'll never be on it.
Yeah, that's not going to be a fun show to listen to. Another Brian. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Love the show. I have maybe a more general question. And why is it when we always have a Democrat president, we have to lower our expectations, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obama was, hey, this is the new normal. And now we've got Jolton Joe Biden saying, hey, this is how it's going to be. You got to lower your expectations.
That's a great point, Brian. You remember Obama, we had
hope and change.
We had tepid GDP growth throughout the Obama administration. We had tepid employment numbers throughout the Obama administration. And it was never their fault. It was always like, this is just the way it is. There's nothing Obama can do.
Yep.
And Trump gets in office and with some simple policy changes was able to get unemployment to record lows, minority unemployment to record lows, women unemployment to record lows. We had control over the border with the simple stay in Mexico policy that gave us so much more control over our border than we'd ever previously had. Was it still chaotic in places? Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Was it still a problem in places? Yes, 100%. But we had more control over our borders than we'd ever had with the simple stay in Mexico policy.
And the reason is because there was high expectations and not low expectations of Trump. Everybody had Trump pegged as, you know, across the board on every poll. Trump outperformed Biden on economic issues. That who do you have confidence in being a driver of the economy? And Trump did well. The CEOs, companies, they had a very high expectation. They invested, they repatriated money because they looked at Trump as a solid economic choice for the guide, for the direction of the country. They invested in their companies. That's why we saw such record growth. Same thing for the border. You know why they didn't come? Because they knew that Trump had high expectations about who would be let into the country. Now, for better or worse, that caused a lot of people illegals to not want to come here. Mm. The reason why they timed their caravan perfectly for Joe Biden's presidency because they believed that the expectations would be lowered to a point where they could just walk across the border and be taken care of. And guess
not just believed, they were told.
Right.
They were told directly by Joe Biden. Come.
Yep.
Come to America. Bring on the caravans. And they did. Let's go to Rick in Annandale. Go ahead, Rick.
Morning, guys, and Sam.
Yeah, Pothole Pete. he disappeared. I don't know if you remember, right after the bicycle coming out of the SUV driven by Secret Service event, and he got out of his SUV two blocks away from his office, and then rode
rode the bike the rest of the way.
I remember that.
Yeah.
And then to answer Brian, Richard Grenell was gay, and he was one of the best national security advisors that Trump had, and Trump was the first president voted in that was in favor of gay marriage.
That's true.
So
that's true.
There,
Trump was for gay marriage before Obama was.
Long before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy. I can go on for hours with you guys about this.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
We'll grab a beer sometime, Rick.
Point out that bicycle thing.
That's
funny. That's a good point. Good point.
Thanks for bringing that up. That's funny. Let's go to Tom in St. Paul. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, good morning, guys. Here's something I find interesting about the maternity, paternity leave question, but really it applies to just about every issue. It always seems like government leaps to the rescue with a Band-Aid to address problems they've pretty much caused.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I look at the fact that so many families have both parents working. Well, gee, health insurance, inflation, any number of issues, tax rates have caused both parents to, quote unquote, have to work. Every disincentive's in place to have one parent at home, but now it's government to the rescue. And I think what's frustrating to me, as well as you, I'm sure, at least half the population buys this.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating that so many people think that, that we should just accept this. It's you know, Rick made a great point. You know, we shouldn't have such low expectations for the way our government operates and the way our government works. We should expect full store shelves. We should expect that we'll have toys to buy for our kids at Christmas. We should expect that we can afford to fill our gas tank once a week.
And that the prices at the very least, yeah, at the very least, that government does not serve as a barrier to that happening. You know, I understand there if the parts aren't being made overseas and they're not available, then, you know, that's not the government's problem that they're not available. But when we have a port that is run by a government entity, like the Port of Los Angeles or any of the ports around the country are all run by some government port authority, mm-hmm. and we have flotillas of supplies waiting to be unloaded. And then I remember we were talking about this. I saw a news story that Los Angeles is working towards going for 24 hours. It's like,
what do you mean working towards?
Working towards, like, you guys couldn't foresee this? Like, boats don't just, like, materialize like Star Trek, you know? They're coming. You plan ahead. Get
maybe
out over
time. I'm naive, but, you know, if you would have asked me 3 or 4 months ago, I would have probably guessed that ports operate 24 hours already.
Right.
Because that seems like the kind of thing that you should have operating 24 hours.
Right. And when
stuff needs to be unloaded, you get hire a third shift.
Right.
And get people. You're telling me you can't find people to work a third shift. And of course you can.
Yeah,
of course you can.
Right.
And these are the same people with all these lowered expectations of, you know, don't expect the Biden administration to fix this. There's nothing they can do. Stop expecting the Biden administration to squash COVID. It's not his fault. But this is the same guy that you believe has the authority to tell private companies of more than 100 employers that they have to institute vaccine mandates. He's got the power to do that,
yeah.
But not the power to actually solve any of these problems.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an intellectual disconnect there.
It's just they want what they want, and they don't care what it takes to get what they want.
Right. Power is good for the things that they want,
right.
And then it should be ignored for the things that they don't want.
And again, you know, I know I've been harping on this angle a lot recently, but, you know, these supply chain issues, they haven't hit the affluent white liberals yet.
Right.
And until they do, we're going to get a lot more editorials out of the Washington Post telling us that we should stop complaining.
Let's see what Starbucks doesn't get their bean shipments.
Yeah.
Let's see how that goes.
As soon as the affluent white liberal isn't able to get his Amazon trinket delivered from China in 2-day prime, you know, then they might start caring and they might start squawking about the supply chain issues. But until then, we should just shut up and be grateful that we've got a transformational president like Joe Biden in office. 651-989-5855. We'll be right back. segments left in your Wednesday edition of Justice and DeDrew. John Justice out ill today. Hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, kind enough to keep me company this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you, studio audience.
Very much appreciate it. We did a story earlier in the show about New Zealand, and they had a COVID zero policy. That was their goal.
You know, and it didn't work.
It didn't work, of course. But we had some questions about the quarantining down there. There was a story about a guy who had
escaped.
Absconded, I think was the word.
When he went home to check on his animal.
Right. So my assumption had been that if you are quarantined anywhere, like in New Zealand or Australia, like you get a, you know, you're in a hotel room or you're at your home.
Right.
If you have a home that you can be quarantined in, that's where you should be quarantined. But apparently that's not the case. Got an email from listener Elizabeth. If you are a COVID positive person in New Zealand, you're required to leave your home and quarantine in an MIQ, which is a managed isolation quarantine facility.
So we do, like they do camp. Have COVID internment camps.
They have COVID camp.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got sent to COVID camp.
That sounds like the worst.
That sounds terrifying.
Camp ever.
There are hotels. Oh, these are hotels that have been retrofitted with improved ventilation units and guarded by New Zealand military. Meals are provided along with daily health checks and COVID tests. You are allowed to have some outside exercise time, usually an hour a day, but this can be disrupted if a large group of international airline passengers are arriving for their required 2-week quarantine, of which if they are remaining in New Zealand for less than 6 months, they have to pay the government $3,000. So, like, if you want to, like, me and Rob, we're going to go to New Zealand. We got to pay them $3,000 for the privilege of quarantining in one of their disease hotels. That sounds terrible.
This is
I just want to see hobbits.
This is, yeah. I want to go to Mordor. How do I do that?
I just want to walk the path of Samwise.
Right. Well, this is, could you imagine trying to do this in the United States? Like there would be people who go like full blown Wolverines, Red Dawn, and like liberate the camps.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, this is not the American culture would not tolerate this.
Right. Well, I deal with this when we talk about gun control stuff all the time because people look at New Zealand and you know all the gun laws they passed in the wake of their tragic mass shooting in Australia after the Port Arthur massacre, and they say you know see look they did it it can work here. No, it can't. Mm-hmm. You're talking about completely different cultures. You're talking about islands that are easy to manage. You're talking about populations that live in the 70 to 80 to 90% in urban areas. Yep. Versus America, which is large rural populations, you know, it is
very just, spread out.
It's just not the same reason like why universal, you know, single payer healthcare won't work in mm-hmm. America because you have people who live in towns of 50 people that are 300 miles away from the closest hospital.
I think liberals would be much better off and would be a lot more successful in their efforts if they understood that.
Right.
That not everything needed to be federalized. Not everything needs to happen out of D.C. and be applicable to Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Right.
Or, you know, or Auburn, Alabama. Or, you know, it's like different cultures are all over this country. You've got every state has its own sort of unique set of circumstances. Every city within that state has its own unique culture and set of circumstances. So if you want something like, say, guaranteed basic income,
there are cities you can go to get that.
Exactly. Yep. There are mechanisms and avenues in place where you could get those things established on a much smaller level. Mm-hmm. And if it proves to be successful, guess what? Another city will adopt it and another city will adopt it. But keep those things localized. Keep them at the city level where applicable or even at no further than the state level where applicable. But like universal health care. People pointed at Mitt Romney and you know, saying, well, RomneyCare, in Massachusetts, so why don't we work nationwide? Because Massachusetts is a lot smaller than the United States.
And again, is if the vast majority of their population are in urban and suburban areas.
Right.
It's very easy when you can have a single facility that a bunch of people go to, you know, that is within driving, walking, or transportation distance. The problem becomes significantly harder when you go to Wyoming and North Dakota, you know,
right.
where, so you're even telling people, don't do that. Don't live in this, in the great parts of our country. You have to go live in a city and have a small apartment, and then you can get it. But guess what? If you want that, there are places you can go right now to get that, to build that. And that's what the whole Laboratories of Democracy was supposed to be, where the different cities, different states tried these things out to see if they worked. If they're good ideas, they need no selling. But what we've ended up with is bad ideas don't work, and then we just decide we need to throw more money at them in order to make them work.
Right.
And when they just fail, they fail. We throw enough money at it, and then we start saying, well, we've thrown so much money on it, we can't let it go.
Got to figure out how to make it work now.
And the beast just grows, and we end up with lowered expectations.
Yep. And that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yep.
But, you know, if you want something like, you know, if you want some of these policies, that's the beauty of really what attracts me to the libertarian mindset is, you know, if you had a truly libertarian nation, right? And right. You had a bunch of socialists that lived in that nation. Well, guess what? You can go start your own little socialist thing.
Yeah.
In a libertarian world, you can go do that. You can start your own little commune. Nobody's going to bother you.
Right.
But in a socialist world, you don't have the luxury of being libertarian.
Well, in socialists, you need to have enough pressure over the means of production in order to provide for everybody.
Right.
Yeah. So without that high level of control, it can't happen. Where libertarians are like, I'm good, leave me alone. Socialist is like, I'm good, now give me what I need.
Yeah. Leave me alone and I'll leave you alone.
Right.
And then the socialist is like, but I don't want to leave you alone.
No, I want your things so that we can equally distribute. I want all of your things. We'll give you some of them back.
You leave me alone and then I get to control your life
right.
as well in exchange. Yeah. That deal doesn't work very well for me. I'm sorry. Got a story out of here out of the Minnesota Reformer. Just a few minutes. It's a kind of a short one. This is yesterday. Henry Pan out of the Minnesota Reformer. A headline is self-driving car. You're about to meet Minnesota winter. The first line of this story jumped out at me because I actually had to Google it. I'm going to read this verbatim. By the time the twee orange painted vehicles officially made their debut in Rochester, twee. Have either of you ever heard that word before? Twee.
Never.
Is that a color? Is it like a type of orange?
No, I thought it was a typo too. That's actually what I thought. Like, that's got to be a mistake. I've never twee. So I actually Googled the word twee. It's a British slang,
of course,
basically.
It is.
Right. I mean, how pinkies up? Let's start this Minnesota Reformers article about self-driving cars in the most pinkies up way possible by putting in like this British slang that hardly anybody's ever heard of.
Typical.
It's it just means quaint. That's really.
Why
it just
wouldn't
means,
they just say quaint?
I know. Quaint is already a pinkies up word.
This is a Minnesota Reformer article?
Yes. Just say quaint.
Put your pinkies down, Reformer. You're fine. You're not that fancy.
Twee. Stop trying to make twee happen.
Twee.
Twee's not going to happen. By the time the twee orange painted vehicles officially made their debut in Rochester on a sunny morning in late September, AKEC, A-K-E-C...
I can't follow any of this.
They're making this article exceptionally and unnecessarily difficult.
Why?
Yeah, we'll just call him Alex. Akek Garang had already written them twice. Garang lives in downtown Rochester and was captivated by the vehicles and how they can handle varying traffic conditions. He stepped on about a half an hour before they stopped running for the day because he wanted to see them handle rush hour traffic. So they got these shuttles in Rochester, and they operate on a route called the Med City Mover, and they're slow-moving, battery-powered vehicles about the size of an average SUV, and they can seat up to 6 people. As part of a pilot project, they provide these self-driving SUVs, basically little mini buses. They provide free rides between the People's Food Co-op downtown with the Mayo Clinic campus about a half a mile apart. The pilot program costs the state about $1.5 million over the next year. Allegedly will help transportation planners figure out how to move people around with autonomous vehicles. But the real question is how are they going to keep them going during the winter? The story goes on to write, autonomous vehicles have many potential benefits. They may eliminate the need to own a car because autonomous vehicles can drive around 24/7, taking people to wherever they need to go. That means less demand for parking and more land for everything else. And if they're proven to work in the Minnesota winter, which is the real question, They might prevent deadly crashes. Now, not everyone is excited about autonomous vehicles. Senator Jim Abler remains uneasy after hearing about crashes involving autonomous vehicles outside of Minnesota. He's introduced legislation requiring systems that allow a vehicle to drive itself to be disabled. Chief among Abler's concerns is their ability to navigate on icy road conditions during Minnesota winter. The minute you take a driver out from behind the wheel, Minnesota weather being what it is, I don't know how on earth some GPS robot is going to react to an icy road slick.
It's a valid concern.
It's one of the most valid concerns.
Is how do you teach it to know what we know as drivers, that black ice spot? You need to get going before you hit it, because if your tires land on it, you got to stop a little bit ahead of the stop light, right? Because if your tires are sitting on that black ice, you ain't going nowhere.
Right.
Things like that, you know.
When you hit the brakes, when you're coming down an off ramp of the off the interstate, and you're on a bit of a downhill grade, and the road is just icy enough that your brakes are essentially rendered useless.
Yep.
And you just slide on out into the intersection, crossing your fingers, and nobody hits you.
Yep.
Happens to me at least once a winter.
Right.
At least once a week. It drives me nuts. Nothing stresses me out more than that moment where you realize, oh, I'm no longer in control of this vehicle.
Yes, it is.
That's fun.
Please don't hit me.
Here we go.
Jesus, take the wheel.
I wonder when this will end.
I tweeted out a picture of this vehicle at hashtag TCNT on Twitter for Twee Cities News Talk. you can see it looks like a very top-heavy vehicle with very tiny wheels.
Yeah.
I am here for seeing Kim Norton, who famously on Twitter thought that a windshield wiper of a Subaru that was crashed on the side of the road was a gun sticking out of the vehicle that must have gone off by itself and caused a car accident.
Oh my God.
She literally thought this on Twitter. I can't wait to see her responding to the accidents involving these little tiny wheeled vehicles.
You know they're going to happen, right? I mean, it's an inevitability.
I think within the first week, they're going to see that they're completely not working and they're going to take them offline.
So how do we do this? How do we accomplish, you know, if the goal is to have some degree of sort of autonomous public transit, right? You know, if you want to downsizing public transit, I think is a pretty worthwhile goal. Like, yes. Not everything, obviously trains are ridiculous. We shouldn't be spending a dime on trains. Light rail is a joke. But you get down to sort of like the bus service. Like, you could do a lot more efficient bus routes with, say, minivans.
Right.
We talked about this with the school bus.
Yesterday with the school buses. Yeah, right? Absolutely.
So something like this, I mean, I could see a place for it. How do we get to the point where, you know, you're able to, like, I don't think these things are ever going to be able to run in winter.
I think you're describing basically airport shuttle service.
Yeah.
There's been a solution for this. If you're at
I'm a great innovator.
Yes. but you need to go to the Mayo Clinic. Guess what? You just wait 20 minutes and there's going to be a shuttle that'll bring you over there.
Should we be striving towards having autonomous public transportation? I don't think so.
I think driverless cars are the wave of the future. There will be some point in the future, not too distant, where it's like Minority Report, where you just get into your little pod and it's just going to bring you where you need to go.
I'm really skeptical of there. I don't disagree with you. I do think that driverless cars are going to be something that is going to happen in our lifetime. They're going to be a lot more prevalent sometime in the near-ish future. I don't disagree with that. But I don't know that... Like, I'm having a really difficult time imagining how they actually get them to work in winters like we get here.
And that's the challenge.
I don't know that we're anywhere close to being able to accomplish
that. They might work great in San Diego, where there's really, you know, no concerns of any road hazards or things like that for 98% of the year.
All across Florida.
Yep. And we're going to see the same things with electric vehicles here. I'm very curious. You know, there's been a huge boom in electric vehicles, but I'm very curious in 4 or 5 years, how many people stick with electric vehicles? Mm-hmm. Because their range goes down in cold weather. Their battery, the life expectancy of the battery goes down when it's repeatedly exposed to cold weather. So are people really going to want to stick with that? So these things, have to be figured out in order to be able to apply before we start getting into these mandates and throwing a bunch of money behind it. You know, there's sometimes a place where a little bit of government funding can throw gas on a really great idea and help bring it to scale. But most often, a little bit of government funding puts out the flame, and then we throw a bunch more money to try to get it started back up again.
Right.
And I'm worried that's what's going to happen with
these. Well, we're already seeing that. I mean, Governor Walz is just trying to, wants to mandate that, a certain percentage of vehicles sold in Minnesota be electric, whether or not they have a buyer
right
or not.
Yeah, ordering the lots to have this many vehicles on there. Yeah, that'll be great.
651-989-5855. Quick break. Final segment of your Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew coming up. Wednesday edition of Justice and Drew. John out ill this morning. Send him some nice tweets, if you would, and wish him well. We expect he'll be back tomorrow. Rob Dorr from the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus, kind enough to come in and keep me company this morning. Very much appreciate it.
My pleasure. Best wishes to John. Hope he's back tomorrow.
We got the open phone lines at 651-989-5855. Sam in there eagerly anticipating your call.
Or Google searches.
Do not misrepresent me.
In 2017, August of 2017, President Trump was roundly mocked and derided when he expressed concern that the statue destroyers would move on from statues of Confederate General Robert E. Lee to statues of former presidents and founding fathers George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Major media accused Trump of making inappropriate and even ridiculous comments. Fewer than 3 years later, though, precisely as President Trump predicted, iconoclastic mobs have moved on from toppling Confederate statues to deface, damage, and destroy statues and of and memorials to people like Admiral David Farragut, abolitionist Matthias Baldwin, American Revolutionary War General Philip Schuyler, a Texas Ranger, commanding general of the Union Army Ulysses S. Grant, Francis Scott Key, Abraham Lincoln, George Washington, and Thomas Jefferson. A statue of former President Theodore Roosevelt is facing imminent removal in New York City.
Yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt, what did he do? I got the story from CNN here. A vote by a little-known New York City committee on Monday signals the end of a two-decade effort to remove a statue of Thomas Jefferson from the chambers of the New York City Council. The Public Design Commission, which oversees the city's collection of public art, voted 8-0. Unanimously to relocate the statue at the behest of the members of the city council's Black, Latino, and Asian caucus. Councilmember Inez Barron told the commission Monday the proposal to relocate the statue to a museum run by the New York Historical Society was the product of 20 years of effort.
They were ahead of the curve, at least.
Unbelievable. 20 years of effort. So President Trump predicted that they would quickly move on from Confederate statues because the argument was like, why are we honoring the side that lost the war? They seceded from the country and they lost. Why are we honoring them? And it was just going to be the Confederate statues, right? But these idiots, they don't know who. They just see a statue.
Mm-hmm.
They just see a statue. They look at the statue. That looks like it could have been a white man. let's take that one down, too.
Yeah, who cares if he actually fought for slavery, fought to overcome slavery they were abolitionists or they actually
Well, that was the one in Wisconsin. They tore down the statue of an abolitionist.
Or Christopher Columbus, right? Yeah. Right here.
In front of the state patrol with our lieutenant governor looking out the window approvingly.
Yes.
Saying, I wasn't sad. Wasn't sad to see that go. It doesn't matter if you were sad or not. Do you respect the law?
Right.
Do you have any respect for the law?
And she sits on the Capitol Committee, the investment committee that actually reviews requests to have these statues moved or removed.
Yeah, there's a process.
Yes. I'm not somebody who says, hey, if government is failing to adequately address your concerns, I'm not against, taking some measures that may be civilly disobedient in order to get your message across. But you got to try step A before you go to, before you go to plan B.
Yeah. The civil disobedience is supposed to be sort of the last resort.
Right.
I mean, it's supposed to be the, we've tried. appealing to our representatives. We've tried crafting legislation and introducing it.
Introducing measures, showing up at meetings. But most of the time, it's just people who are like, A is too time-consuming, or I don't want to do it, so let's just go right to B and tear stuff down or break stuff.
Because that stuff plays better on social media, too.
I mean,
working on legislation doesn't really get you a lot of likes on the gram.
Right. It's unfortunate, too, because, by their own actions, we can't confront some of the darker parts of our history because we just want to pretend like it never existed. Let's have that conversation about, yes, Thomas Jefferson implanted a lot of great ideas about liberty, but also he had a problematic history with slaves. Let's have that discussion. I presume that Theodore Roosevelt is probably something related to his role in the Spanish-American War and killing a lot of Latino people in Cuba. But let's have that conversation about somebody's virtues and their imperfections, so that
that's the whole point.
Right,
that's the whole point of keeping these people in the public mind, is because of what they contributed, of what they gave us. You can honor and respect and learn from what somebody gave us, what somebody contributed to the world, while still acknowledging that they might have done some bad things too.
Right.
And they might have advocated for some bad things as well. Or maybe they just lived in a time where things that we now consider to be reprehensible were not considered reprehensible. And they just, their big sin was not fighting against what the rest of the culture was doing at the time.
Which nobody else was fighting against. Yeah.
Right. At least the majority of people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
And so, we're retroactively holding them to modern standards, which is problematic. But
a waste of time.
Yes.
And a waste of time. We've got problems right now that we can deal with, that we should focus on.
I love being able to have those conversations about the great things that somebody did, some of the challenges that they overcame, and some of the problematic things about their history. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are never going to have a figure in history which is flawless, which is without fault, which is of complete virtue. Every leader,
human beings are fallible,
right? Every leader of every religion, of every political arm, every country, every city has something in their past which they regret, which may have been against the norms of the time. But the real value in human experience is that we grow from those challenges. We learn from our mistakes. We talk about it. We overcome them, and we become better people. None of that. We don't become better people by just pretending that terrible things and terrible aspects of history didn't happen, or that the great virtues that somebody did contribute to society, to humanity, are worthless because of some of their less than virtuous characteristics.
You know, the left likes to talk about Trump supporters as if they're a cult. You know, they often use that type of language, a cult of Trump supporters. Well, one of the hallmarks of a cult is believing that the leader of the cult is infallible.
Right.
Right. Believing that the leader of the cult is, spoken to God or chosen by God, or
they're omniscient.
Some sort of better creature than the rest of us, which is why they are there to lead the cult. I don't know of any people who supported Trump that weren't fully open and admitting to his faults and shortcomings.
Yeah.
Was he a philanderer? Yeah. Sleep with a porn star? Sure did.
Is he not very nice to people?
can he be a giant a-hole sometimes and make fun of people that don't deserve it? Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. Like, we all get that. You know who doesn't do that? The people that are supporting Joe Biden right now.
Yeah.
You know who doesn't admit that their leader, the person that they've chosen, has any faults, or at least if there are faults, you are supposed to suppress them and not talk about them? What's more cult-like, the behavior of Trump supporters, or having an entire media apparatus suppress a negative story about Joe Biden's son because they didn't want people to hear it before the election?
Yeah,
that's cult behavior. That is cultish right there. Pretending that these stories are fake and made up and don't exist, these legitimate real scandals involving the son of the current president and former vice president and what he did while he was vice president, like suppressing all of that and pretending and telling everybody that no, those are just lies, from that's cultish behavior.
Yep.
Not the Trump supporters. Well, that's the behavior I'm worried about.
And that's the main function of a cult is essentially an extreme form of gaslighting where you supplement somebody's perspective of reality with whatever narrative that you want to put forward. So yeah,
it's very North Korean.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's the culture around talking about the issues and scandals of the Biden administration. It's very North Korean right now.
Yeah, and
you can't say anything bad about Joe Biden. The only thing you can say bad about Joe Biden is, well, he's not trying hard enough to fix all the things that Trump broke.
Yeah,
that's like the harshest criticism you will hear from a liberal when it comes to our current president.
And I enjoy seeing some of the pushback from like the New York Times. You know, when they're talking about the Pete Buttigieg's absence and things like that, that they're actually highlighting some of these things. I think the media started to wake up. Now they're getting mad because Joe Biden isn't answering their questions. He's ignoring them.
Right.
So it's not necessarily that they're incensed that he isn't being open and honest. It's their sense that they're not being able to have their same elevated pedestal in the Fifth Estate. You know,
there's a new book coming out called The Bidens, and it's by a Politico reporter, Ben Schreckinger. And I'm going to read a little excerpt from Matt Taibbi's Substack here. He writes, "No journalism is apolitical, but Schreckinger's approach to investigating the first family is as close as you'll find in the, quote, moral clarity era to old school aspirations to objectivity. The book initially won love from the conservative press because Schreckinger brought the mainstream sort of gravitas of Politico that would confirm some of the key emails and incidents in the infamous Hunter Biden laptop scandal. But that enthusiasm tailed off from conservative media a bit when reporters for those outlets actually read the book, because it was also brutal in its treatment of figures like Rudy Giuliani, Lev Parnas, and Donald Trump. Schreckinger is an equal opportunity offender. In the author's note, however, it's clear that Brett Schreckinger, this Politico reporter who wrote this book called The Bidens, it's clear that he is concerned about how the mere act of publishing damaging information about Joe Biden and his family members will be received. Quote, "We live in an age of distrust and of coordinated campaigns to manipulate public opinion. Readers have every right to wonder whether an extended inquiry into the Biden family emphasizing its finances is just some instrument of a broader effort to create a political narrative." He goes on to reassure readers that that's not what he's up to, that he just believes the best way to understand people in power and subjects of international controversy is to attempt a thorough, timely examination. He then adds in a note that reads like he's saying, "You may be more receptive to these disquieting facts in a few years," which is basically what he's saying here. Like, I know the timing right now is not going to work for a lot of people, but all the stuff in the book is true.
Yeah.
You might not be willing to accept it until after Joe Biden's out of office. He wrote, "Too often, people interpret the news of the day through the lens of their own political sympathies."
Mm-hmm.
Could not be more accurate.
Right. And we're all guilty of it.
Yep. Everybody is guilty of that.
I think most of the time,
every single human being walking on the face of the earth is guilty of that.
Right. When we see a story, we typically, if we think it aligns with us, we say, okay, how can I agree with this? So we look at, if it comes from an outlet or a source that we like, or a topic we like, we say, how can we agree with this? If it comes from somewhere that we disagree, usually our first action is, all right, what can I find to disagree with this? Yeah, and that's all our own biases. It's just important that you recognize that, and part of being intellectually honest is being able to gather from multiple sources and try to look at it objectively, putting your own preferences and your own leanings aside. It's very hard for people to do. I certainly fail at it a lot, but I always try to. And it sounds like, you know, the author's giving us this warning that, hey, if you are inclined to like the Bidens, you probably won't like what I'm going to say here, but it's true. But, you know, maybe in a couple years, you'll be able to step out of the current lens and say, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's basically how he ends the author's note by saying, "A more nuanced understanding of our leaders typically emerges only much later, when political pressures have eased."
And that's true, too.
And we're seeing that happen. We're almost out of time here.
Yep.
We're seeing that happen with Trump. It's slowly starting to happen with Trump, where a lot of the people that were orange man bad, this guy's a Nazi, everything he says is horrible, everything he touches is awful, are now starting to come out and go, well, maybe, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Almost every president's approval ratings increase after they're out of office.
Sam.
Yes.
kind of a scattershot show today. We're a bit all over the map, but I trust I trust that you indeed learned something.
I did.
This morning.
I did. Around 6:30 this morning, I learned that Facebook is planning to change its parent company name next week to reflect its focus on building the metaverse, which is about the most terrifying thing I've heard all week.
I don't want to be a part of the metaverse. No. I don't even know what it is, but I don't want to be a part of it.
I don't want to be a part of it.
I'll be in the multiverse. I'd be happy to be in the multiverse, but not the metaverse.
The metaverse sounds scary. Around 7:30 this morning, we had Representative Tom Emmer on the show around 7:30 this morning, and I learned how much he loves Hump Day. After 8 a.m., I learned more about what Mayor Pete has been up to lately and why some people might be frustrated with him. If you missed any of those conversations and want to catch up on the show, find our podcast on the iHeartRadio app by searching for Justice and Drew.
Hopefully, John will be all better and back tomorrow. If not, you might hear Rob Dorgan.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I'm on standby.
We'll see. Nice. Thank
put me
you
in,
so
Coach.
Much. Give out the information for your gun owners caucus.
Gunowners.mn. We're suing suing the state. Suing got lawsuits going on. Suing in the state fair, the state of Minnesota. And I've got a live video coming up on all our social media channels at 7 p.m. tonight.
Gunowners.mn.
.mn.
Give them some money.
Yes, we need money. Lawyers are expensive.
Have a great day, everybody. We're back tomorrow, 6 to 9.
Open up the door, I'll get it myself. Do you hear me? I don't want nobody to give me nothing. Open up the door, I'll get it myself. I don't give me generation, give me truth, communication.